Welcome back to another episode from the Beyond Human Relations series of the Future Based podcast with me, your host, Chetna Pai. In the last episode, I was in conversation with Dr. Anton Poikulainen-Rosen about the method he has been developing for how we can approach design problems while keeping the more than human in mind. Following from that, in today's episode, we will be thinking a bit broader about more than human and how we can take these different perspectives into consideration. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Erik Peters about his approach of collaborative world building and his new work called Transoceanic Mythologies, which is an exploration of flood myths and human nature relationships in folklore. Listen on to hear more about this project and how AI can be used to help us with interspecies storytelling. Erik Peters is an interdisciplinary artist and designer engaging with the world building potentialities seeded in the act of storytelling, uncovering how speculative fiction can germinate new universes of being. Their research-based and collaborative practice is situated in an interdependent web of ecologies and technologies, human and non-human beings. Within their work, queer methodologies and mythologies are evoked to create multidisciplinary scenarios about possible futures, imaginative worlds staged as spatial and interactive installations, workshops, publications, and audiovisual works. They frequently work with materials and techniques such as generative artificial intelligence, ceramics, 3D printing, and 3D scanning methods. I can't wait to hear more about Erik's work, so let's get into the episode.
Hi, Erik. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's really nice to have you here. How have you been doing?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. I've been good. Yeah, excited. Excited to talk more with you today.
So for the last two episodes, we've been talking a bit with designers, and the previous episode specifically with Anton, we talked about design probes for how do you design for more than human. And so it's quite centered in the now and the world that we are currently living in. I thought that you would be quite an interesting guest to expand that vision a bit and take us to a new space to think about this a little bit differently as well. But before we really get into talking about things, I wanted to ask you, in your practice, how do you define human and beyond human? What is the difference? What do you consider human and more than human or beyond human?
So I think what we consider human, and it's quite given in a way. But in terms of more than human or beyond human, I think how I approach this field or this group in my practice is both more than humans in the sense of ecological systems, natural beings, animals, plants, fungi, and natural structures, but also technological entities. And I think that's kind of, it's related to humans, but it's kind of going beyond humans, I think, especially in this age where more and more intertwining these boundaries between what we consider as natural and artificial.
So would you put the artificial and natural kind of into the same category in some sense? Because in one of our previous podcasts, I was talking with Professor Jelle van Dijk, and he felt quite strongly about them being two different kinds of more than human, and so they should be treated or engaged with differently. How is this for you in your practice? Do you have separations between the types of beyond or more than human and the ways you would like to engage with them or do engage with them?
Yeah, I guess so. As much as I'm exploring, let's say, technological entities or systems, or experiment with them in a way that maybe includes a little bit of their agency, at the end of the day, it is still a human product for now. And that might still change in the future. But in a way, it's still an extension of us. I guess in that way, I would agree that it's a different kind of more than human than the rest of the world around us that was there before us also. And that will be also there way long after us.
Maybe the technology will also stay way long after us.
Yeah, I mean, good point.
But we will have to see, or someone will see. I also liked doing this, asking about what do you think about human and more than human, because in the design probes we talked about last time, I think the second step or the first step was really about understanding and articulating everybody in the project's worldviews and then creating a shared language where everyone understands the meaning of words. And I think that really makes quite a big difference. And with this whole idea of a worldview, I feel like what you are doing, and when I think about the phrase of collaborative world building, it feels like one step above that. It's like you have trying to create a shared worldview or understanding everybody's worldview, but then instead you make a collaborative world together. But maybe I've understood it wrong. Could you tell us a bit more about collaborative world building and what you mean by that?
No, I think you're describing it quite good. So this idea of world building, of imagining a world, right? It's kind of build a world, which means not just creating a, like, or exploring a story or just exploring an object or a system, but everything that intertwines with it. Whether the world is a completely fictional one, one that exists in the future, one that exists in the past, or one that's kind of emerged between our reality and a reality that we haven't experienced yet. And I think in creating these kinds of reflections, what's really important to consider is that, especially when you say world builder, that almost, that becomes almost close to the sense of a dictator, maybe, like one person who decides for the rest of the world what that should look like or how that should function. And also coming from an understanding that there will only be one world. So I that's not something I really, really agree with. So I think that there's an infinite amount of ways of experiencing a world and contributing to a world. And if that's a belief, let's say, or if that's an understanding that we have, then what it means for me to build a world, that cannot be an individual approach. Because if we're talking about the necessity of a plural perspective on a world, what I try to do is include that plurality or include more perspectives in the process itself. It always includes collaborating or imagining with other people, other humans, but it also often means collaborating with other than humans, let's say, because those perspectives are just as valid on existing in a world because they exist just as much as we do.
How do you approach this, bringing in other perspectives in your practice?
As I said before, it's through collaborating in the narratives that I shape or design. So that's working with other people from different fields. So that's other artists, but that's also like other visual artists, but also writers, people from the science fields. That's also just makes it more fun for me personally.
Yeah, of course.
To make something. But I also try to, especially like as we were talking about technological systems as perspectives or as entities, I also work with generative AI in the process of writing scripts, in the process of imagining artifacts of or creating images, both with more mainstream platforms as well with training my own models on, let's say, for example, texts from certain philosophers that have passed away already, but whose perspective I feel could be an interesting addition or has an interesting or important value to a project I'm considering, then training a model on those texts and fusing them with maybe contrary texts or other kinds of texts. It's kind of a way to, I wouldn't say collaborating with the dead, maybe that's a little bit too strongly, but in a way it invites for more perspectives than the ones in my direct surroundings to shed a light on a certain topic. And by fusing them, so not by just working with one person, like one text, it also creates new connections. And I think that's what, for me, is the interesting part of AI in this matter. It's not per se, okay, it allows me to copy something or to add something this way, but kind of the new combinations that arise from it and the glitches, really, that come from it.
Yeah.
I think that's really something that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because the world is full of contradictions and glitches. So this glitch feminism, it talks about an aesthetic approach or like a theoretical approach to using the idea of a glitch in reclaiming imaginations or reclaiming space, coming from the understanding that when we talk about glitches, that's glitches inside a world or a structure that's broken already anyway. Like, we are not living in a flawless world, we're living in a world that's eating itself. So maybe actually those glitches, the things that don't fit inside that structure, maybe they make more sense than the structure itself.
I think that's such a nice way to put like how people feel. It's like describing an experience I have had at times in my life that nothing else has been able to give me a good word for it. But I think feeling like a glitch is really like the right way to put it.
Maybe that also gives some I don't know, puts us a little bit at ease, the idea that, like, as much as it seems like everyone works within the system, at the end we're all glitches, or whether that's a big glitch or a small glitch, we're all glitching away.
And maybe the glitch is not beyond human, but it is human. And that is also kind of comforting.
Yeah, it's both. It's like human, but also beyond the human.
Yeah.
It exists. Simply, it exists.
In one of your projects where you work with artificial coral reefs, you mentioned that you explore their perspective through interspecies storytelling with AI. Could you talk a bit more about that project and also how you do interspecies storytelling with AI? Because now we talked a bit about bringing back a human, maybe, but how do you use AI for more than that?
Yeah, so both those projects kind of come from a body of research that I've been engaging with for a couple of years now, which is the concept of artificial coral reefs. So this idea that in the fight against coral destruction and ecosystem destruction, we're designing and building and placing artificial reefs. Throughout the years, we've experimented with a lot of different kinds of materials, from concrete and plastic and waste, really. Also, like, illegal coral reefs are a thing, to natural materials such as printing with clay. So we're creating these structures that we place in the ocean, and over time, natural coral will grow on top of it. And what I kind of started to think of, or what I find interesting, I guess, in my practice in general, is thinking of the world, how it might exist in the future, but not as much as in, like, let's say 150 years in the future or something very sci-fi. I'm not super interested in that, but kind of looking a little bit into the future, or like a little bit on what's just beyond what we're expecting or imagining. So it's a bit of a dystopic vision in this case, but I'm trying to think of or explore what happens when coral has gone extinct, which I hope won't happen, because that
yeah.
is devastating and it will make life very difficult. But once they pass away or it's gone, what still remains in the ocean are these human-created artifacts or these structures. Like, the artificial reefs without the natural reefs are still artificial reefs.
Yeah.
And over time, over generations, at some point, that is maybe the closest people will get to experience as a reef, which is kind of weird. It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
So in these projects, what I try to do is I'm kind of imagining this speculative scenario in which these artificial reefs are sentient beings. So whether that's, like, maybe a fusion between artificial sentience and, like, ecological sentience, I don't know, you know, if there's a need to differentiate that, but they're alive and they reflect and they think, and they also feel kind of, they feel like glitches also, because
yeah.
they're kind of in this ocean, and their sole purpose in the world was to support and care for these reefs, and it wasn't enough. And they're still there, and they will still be there. And it's kind of, I don't know.
It's a bit sad.
Yeah. So the works that I'm exploring, and that goes kind of between sculptures, audiovisual works, writing, are artifacts of these artificial reefs. And so when there's a script, it kind of comes from the perspective of this reef. So interspecies storytelling, in the sense that the main protagonist doesn't always have to be human, or comes from a human perspective. And then also, what does it mean to be a reef, right? In general, not to be one body, but to be kind of interconnected. I don't know yet if the artificial reefs work in the same way as the natural reefs in this, but they think as a whole, like as a swarm almost. So if you start thinking like a swarm, does it mean you all have the same opinion, or do you disagree within the swarm? So that's kind
Is
of what I try.
Is the thought process just like all these government parliaments? Discussing,
they are they like all
like a
talking
swarm
to each other and like argumenting, and at some point they vote and there's like a decision, or do you just automatically think as one being? So I don't know. And because it goes beyond my own understanding, I think working with AI is a way of kind of widening my own thinking.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting, no, because AI has also in some sense been built on content that humans have created, but it still helps us push beyond what we are thinking of. Yeah, it's still a human perspective in some way, but it helps with more than human.
Yeah, I think because in combining the perspectives of a multitude of people, something new emerges. It's not just 1 + 1 = 2, it's like 1 + 1 = 4.
AI yeah, is our swarm.
Yeah, in a way, and like, and it just doesn't make sense. Like, what comes out is not always something that could be the answer, but that's the glitch.
How do you engage with AI for this interspecies storytelling or to try and move to other perspectives? What do you start with?
So in this specific project, it's a collaborative project, and we trained 2 models on a set of 6 texts. So one model was trained on text surrounding the idea of hyper-truth, like post-truth, hyper-reality. The idea kind of in relation to how I was describing the project before, these symbols or shadows of things that somehow become more real than the original because we forget. And it's a new kind of truth. So that was one model. And the other model I trained on text, thinking about ecology more from like an interconnected way. So ecofeminism, Gaia theory, queer ecology. So each model is already a multitude of perspectives, but I would write a sentence or kind of I had a narrative structure in my mind for the piece. And then I would just pose both of these models a question and they would come up with the most ridiculous answers. And then I would try to fuse that. So that's kind of what I meant to explain earlier with is if you think like a part of a whole, does that mean you can also contradict yourself? So I would ask something and they would both say different things. And I would include both of those answers in a way in the writing. So when you listen to the monologue, I think it's something you kind of get lost in a little bit. But if you start analyzing what's being said between the sentences, it just doesn't really make sense all the time.
Could you maybe tell us about the project you're currently working on? Because I think that's interesting and takes a slightly different approach. Also, because you're looking at the past a bit now in exploring this, right?
What I'm working on this year is a research project called Transoceanic Mythologies. Maybe a very fancy title for something that hasn't really
Sounds
shaped
great.
Yet. in any way, but I'm working together with Bianca Caragüe on a project called Maria Islands, and it's kind of this fictional or speculative group of islands made out of plastic. More than anything, it's a framework or like a prompt for ourselves to create new works, as well as, again, drawing back to the start of this conversation about like plural ways of being in a world, it's also an invitation to others. So kind of what we're doing is it responds to climate realities between the Netherlands and the Philippines. The exhibition, the first iteration that we're presenting, will be in a few months in Manila, for example. And these plastic islands, at the moment, they're in our head. They're kind of floating around the coast there. But at the same time, I feel like they're also floating here near Rotterdam. I'm currently in Rotterdam for people who can see me, which is everyone listening right now. It's all still very, very much shaping up. But how this places in the bigger research or in the project that I'm kind of exploring is when we're talking about climate crisis and the reality of climate crisis, again, it's not a one-side perspective, right? Like I think here in the West, I have this sense that it feels like something very far away and also very apocalyptical. Like, you know, the end of the world, it's like massive, massive floods, there's fires, volcanoes. It's kind of how we see it in like pop culture and in movies.
Yeah.
Like very fictional in a way. Where at the same time, it's already happening and it has already been happening. Like where for a country like the Netherlands, the consequences have so far still been quite mild. The increasing amount of floods and heavy weather conditions and droughts are already felt across the world, including the Philippines. So drawing from that, okay, if we talk about climate crisis, if our understanding of it comes from a different experience, because that's at the end what it is we don't experience it yet in this way, and therefore we don't relate to it in the same way. But also, climate comes from ecology, right? It comes from nature. And what we consider as nature is also something that differs across cultures and that differs across people. I think in the Netherlands, we're very used to this perspective or like relationship towards nature that it just has to move for us. We are a country that's, you know, partly underwater. We are very good at thinking about, we're very good at designing for, and we're very good at working with landscapes to the benefit of humans. So if we need more land, we build more land. Simply, that's how it works. If we want less floods, we build dikes. We create waterways. And this water management culture, or this geoengineering culture of just transforming landscapes, it's something I think Dutch people somehow are good at. Like it's an export for the country as well. And what I find interesting is thinking about, okay, but what kind of cultural understanding of nature is behind that method towards designing? So if we talk from a more animistic perspective, in which all of these landscapes and ecosystems that we're working with or that we're being part of, if we consider those to have an agency or a voice, then we cannot just make new land, or we cannot just make a new waterway. We cannot just move things just because we want it. Personally, also, I'm trying to learn more from different perspectives of looking at what nature is, or how we can experience nature and how I can experience nature in a different way. Because I'm Dutch also, so I'm just as much still influenced by this. So transoceanic mythologies as a research project, I'm looking into folklore, myths, stories in relation to water that you can find everywhere. Because the water is everywhere. Rather than looking at like, this is so different, I'm looking at similarities between certain kinds of stories. So at the moment, for example, I'm looking into flood myths, the narrative of one massive flood that kind of washes away everything. So a country ceases to exist, or a place ceases to exist. And it's a punishment because humans usually did something wrong, but it's also a certain kind of salvation because it's a brand new start.
Yeah,
so it rebirth. Like maybe pro- yeah it's a rebirth. And probably one flood myth we all know is in the Bible, it's Noah's Ark. So also the word myth, I don't really know yet how I position this, but you find it in Noah's Ark, the big flood. You find it in Atlantis from Plato, also the city that sunk. But interestingly enough, in almost all cultures you will find a certain kind of flood myth.
We have a really similar one in India to Noah's Ark in many ways. It's just, it's not a boat, it's a fish. It's one of the incarnations of Vishnu. This is his fish avatar to save everybody through the flood. But yeah, it's funny that it's so similar. I always thought so as well.
Yeah, so I'm kind of at the moment just reading a lot and looking everywhere for these flood myths that are also often also origin stories. Still a lot we can learn from it, perhaps. Humans have just always been obsessed or related to the water.
I was actually going to ask where your fixation with the water started, since all of these projects are very to do with the water, because the water to me also feels a bit like a different world in itself. Like, I feel like it's so interesting to build ideas of the future in water or with water.
Yeah, I don't really know where it started per se. I think this coral project just kind of happened by coincidence in a way. I found this really old publication and I had it stored, and I found it was like a scientific publication with drawings of corals in Ireland in like the 17th century or something. And it's something that I found a couple like years and years ago, and I just saved it on my computer just to, you know, to have. And then one day it just started there. And I think from, I don't know, it's where my fascination for coral reefs as ecosystems, or the way how they function and what we can learn from that. I think that's where my fascination started. And then kind of slowly zooming out is indeed this world underwater that we know so, so little about, especially going into deeper, deeper oceans. It's the kind of ways of living and the creatures that exist there. It's really something we can't really relate to so much yet. It's almost fantastical by itself already. And I think that's why I find it so interesting. So maybe also that's in turn where then at the moment my interest into mythologies also comes from these things. But what's then the truly felt experience, or like the knowledge or the understanding that we can get from it?
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. This idea of looking both back and forward, it really and looking at these spaces like with water, which are already a bit distant for us, are great ways to put everybody a bit in the mindset also of thinking about more than human, because it pushes you a lot more outside of your current reality, which then makes you, I think, engage with your current reality differently, which I think is really nice. Because even now, if I think about these artificial coral reefs and this whole possibility of the future of these reefs that were built for this purpose just being left behind, it makes me think of a lot of things in my world and what role are they playing and what are they supporting? And if they're not, like, what are they for? Which I think is really nice when thinking about more than human, also in terms of non-sentient beings, like what are these more than human objects doing and what will their role be in the future and what was their role before and how do we relate to all these things? And I think myths especially are so interesting because it tells you a lot about what we feared also as humans and why don't we fear it anymore? And did we do all of this because we were so scared? Was this a big...
Yeah, we don't do it anymore yet. It's coming back, like, or yeah. It is there. Like, we should be afraid. We should be scared shitless. And a lot of us are.
Yes, that's true. I just wanted to ask one last small thing, but in your description of this project, which you sent to me, or was it in your bio? One of the two, you also talk about queer methodologies. Could you tell me a bit more about what exactly that refers to, so our listeners also get a better idea?
Yeah, I think it's something that kind of weaves inherently through my practice, through my interest in the ways how I approach these projects. So when we talked about glitch feminism, for example, or glitches, I think queerness itself is in this world is considered as a glitch. So kind of retaking it as something powerful, I guess, but also
like reclaiming it a bit,
reclaiming the glitch, but also in looking at coral reefs or looking at ecosystems in general, there's these more queer ecological ways of existing in a world that depend more on coexistence, on mutualism. So ways that benefit everyone involved, that serves a community rather than, if that's the comparison we're making, then maybe you can compare like the heteronormative society to the understanding of survival of the fittest in ecology, like, and also our understanding of ecology, our scientific understanding of ecology, and the dualistic perspective that there is even a separation to be made between ecology or like nature and what is human. So all of these mindsets and worldviews come from a certain kind of Western and normative perspective. And for me, queering that or queer methodologies includes kind of trying to untangle that a little bit, or trying to see what other ways there are to simply exist. It's something that's inherently part of everything. It's looking for a way to exist in the world because I haven't always felt like I had the right to exist in this world.
Yeah, I think like removing the binary and duality makes a lot of sense also, like you were saying, in this idea of not having these separations and more just collaborating. Yeah,
that's exactly. It's like
really nice.
More the entanglements between technologies and humans and ecosystems, all of that goes beyond a hard cut, a binary between what is artificial and what is natural, or what is serving us, what is not serving us. It's rather, everything is messy, everything is glitchy, everything should be serving each other. And I think that's something queer.
And maybe that also, like, if we were to approach designing or imagining the world, maybe it helps if you are not so focused on labeling, because I think that's something we inherently need to do. Or at least we feel like as humans is try to like separate things to have like a better understanding to design something, because we're like, okay, what is this? How do we do this? How do we do that for this specific thing? But maybe it's more about approaching it as a spectrum and a general set of organisms or beings.
I mean, of course, in a way, what we have done so far apparently is not working, or it's not working anymore. Not saying to completely obliterate that, but rather to look more for other perspectives, alternative ones, additional ones.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for talking to me. This was really interesting, and I think it brings quite a different perspective to more than human than what we've talked about before, and I think it's really inspiring. So thank you so much for telling us about your projects and doing them as well.
Yeah, you're so welcome. I just feel like I was rambling in every kind of direction. So I hope you can make some sense out of it.
Do you by any chance have an open question for our listeners?
Maybe I could pose the open question. What would it be like to think like a swarm?
That's a really good question, I think.
I guess it's not just reefs, but it's also AI in a way. It's also a swarm.
Yeah,
it's
exactly. Also, it's also a bit hive mind of the internet in its own way, right? There's many levels on this.
Definitely.
Well, thank you very much. I will put the question also on our mural board. Thank you for the conversation and thank you for your time.
Thank you too. Thank you so much.